You are listening to WBFY Public Affairs Programming, broadcasting at 100.9 in Belfast, Maine, and streaming from the station's website at www.belfastcommunityradio.org. Stay tuned for another interview of a local candidate running for office. In the next hour, Vic Treadwell interviews Neil Harkness, a two-term incumbent candidate for Belfast City Council. Neil represents Ward 2, but it's important to note that Belfast voters vote for all City Council seats, regardless of what ward you live in. Let's hear from Neil Harkness. Vic, take it away.
We have Neil Harkness, City Councilor, in here to talk about his candidacy. Good morning.
Good morning, Vic. Nice to be here.
All right. One thing I wanted to say before we got started is Neil has a special relationship with this radio station. He's the spark plug on the city council
that got it
all started a couple of years ago, realizing that this city's license was going to run out if we didn't get something on the air.
I had been to the meeting, you know, a couple of years earlier when the city had applied for the license. And there had been a big meeting at the boathouse. There was a lot of interest, but nobody followed up on it. So when I got elected in 2014, it was one of the first things I did was find out the status. And I just, you know, I'll take some credit, but what I kept doing is just kept calling meetings, calling meetings until we hit the critical mass of people like yourself who were willing to carry it forward and get it done. And I'm really proud to see what's become of it. Things like this kind of community service of broadcasting these events, getting the debate out there, letting people hear from each other all across the community is exactly what I think everybody hoped for. So I'm really pleased.
Thanks. And that being said, the issue now is the election coming up less than 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And let's start with your background and history here in the town and how long you've been around. And that.
Sure. My wife was from Maine. I was from Michigan. She came out to Michigan, and as soon as she got there, wanted to turn right back around and come back. Partly her kids were here. She had grown children who both stayed in Maine, you know, kind of a flip of what usually happens. The kids stayed and mom left. So we came back, and when we came back, she had lived in Portland. And we wanted to find a place where we knew to the two of us. And we just chanced upon Belfast. And, you know, I've heard other people say, I wasn't born here, but I got here as soon as I could. And I feel that way. We fell in love immediately. That was in 2005.
I see. Good.
And we're still in the same place. We moved in on that first day and on Pearl Street. And we love it. And we felt welcomed into the community. I thought, you're going to a new place. You can do what you want to do. You can be what you want to be. Pretty soon I was the technical director at the Belfast Maskers, had a show on WERU, was running the film series at the library. This community just said, come, be what you want to be, do what you want to do. And I've always felt so welcomed here that from the very beginning I wanted to give back and be of service where I could.
Cool. And on the other side, What's your day job?
Well, I worked for many years in food service, and I'm technically retired. But what I do all day is I drive as a driver for Waldo Cap in the transportation department, which is primarily delivering people not just to medical appointments, but also various social service things. DHS we do, in addition to taking main care patients to appointments. We take children to Head Start. We take people to visitations. We've had different programs over the year where we sometimes even just had people that we could run for errands if need be. But it's primarily medical appointments, and it's very fulfilling work. We're always short of drivers. I'll say anybody out there is looking for something to do. You do get, if you work as a volunteer driver and use your vehicle, you do get paid a stipend that will more than cover your costs and allow you to have a few bucks in your pocket. And you'll go home at the end of the day going, wow, I spent my whole day helping people. And for me, there's an additional bonus to that is that I spend a lot of time talking to the people who don't talk generally to the mayor, to a city councilor, to a legislator, people that may be down on their luck, Maybe people have felt marginalized, and I get to hear from them and be able to follow up on their concerns.
Yeah, I suppose the same people who also are unlikely to get to public meetings and
exactly.
events of that kind. So you've been on the city council how
since,
long?
Since 2014. I've had two terms.
That's right, and that's Ward
2.
Two. Very good. And the question here on we have a list of questions and things we're supposed to do here. And the one thing that I neglected to mention is that this interview and all the other interviews with city council candidates and the two candidates forums, all of those will be rebroadcast quite a number of times between now and the election. And we're trying to get all the candidates in this weekend so that they can all get an even number of re-airings of their hour-long interviews. Also, anything you hear in this interview is the opinion of the speaker, not necessarily of Belfast Community Radio or the City of Belfast, which is the licensee for this station. That said, the next question is, why do you want another term on the council? Why do you think you're the best person for the particular seat?
Good question. When I got elected, there were two primary problems that I saw that I wanted to work on. And the one was the problems we were having with the general assistance office in the city. It was a mess. People were not getting the help they needed, and we went through a lot of work on that and wrote new policies. We got hit with a serious homeless crisis in Belfast, which cost a lot of taxpayer money, and we worked through it. We've got an administrator now, and we've turned that office into more than just, you know, people get confused. There's the general assistance administrator who takes care of the state program to help people with food, fuel, things like that. And you have to go by the state's rules, which often ties your hands. Well, we wanted our general assistance administrator to do more, to run a job center, to be able to direct people. If she couldn't help them, where can they get help? And we've done that, and I feel that's a huge accomplishment. But the other issue that I talked about then was housing. Mm-hmm. I said then that we were heading for a cliff, that we were had a serious housing crisis, and it was going to get a lot worse in a hurry. And I'm not happy to say how right I was. It's gotten much worse. There's a number of factors involved. It's construction costs. It's the general economics of the situation. One of the things you learn in city government really fast is that every time you solve a problem, get ready to figure out what problem is going to be caused by the solution. Belfast is not short of jobs. There's a lot of jobs. There's good jobs in Belfast. They're not necessarily the jobs that local people can get is the problem as far as jobs. But there are people coming here to work at Front Street Shipyard, at the hospital, at Athena Health, at Bank of America. And as they come here for those jobs, they move here from Bangor, from Waterville, from wherever. They put pressure on the housing market. And it's squeezing the local people out, and it's squeezing the lower-income people out. As I said, there's a lot of causes to this, but there's one big cause that the city can have something to do with, and that is the tax rate. We need to get property taxes down. And we've been fighting on this and working on this since I got on council. We've done a lot of things to try to address the problem. We lowered minimum lot sizes, hoping people build some smaller houses. We made it easier for you to turn your bedroom, extra bedroom, into an apartment. We're working right now. We've just finished on the ordinance that makes it easier for you to turn a barn or a garage or a stable into a separate dwelling on your property. And we're working right now on an ordinance about making it easier to split an existing house into multiple units. But none of them are going to work as long as the property tax rate is so high, because the homeowners, in adding an income to their property, they're just going to raise their valuation and their taxes are going to go up. As far as people coming in and building new units, and that's not just for residential, but for retail as well, people aren't going to build new units when the property taxes are so high. So this is an ongoing problem that I said in 2014 I wanted to go to the work on, and it's still going on. And so I really want to be there to keep working on that job more than anything else.
Okay. So I would say that's your top priority. Do you have a couple of others that you could mention, your second and third main priorities?
Yeah, sure. I've been very interested in the development of the Belfast boat. Well, we're calling Belfast Yards, which is the old railroad yard where the Maskers Theater was. Yeah. I have a special kind of an affinity with that property because of the years I spent in that building with the Maskers, and it's too bad that building got beyond the point of rehab because we could just convert it into stores now. But that's something I've been working on quite a bit. And mostly what I'm trying to do every day is trying to bring the people that are marginalized in this community into the fore. And so I focus a lot on those kind of things. I get a lot of calls from people about their, maybe complain about their landlords or that they aren't getting the services they need. And so that's where I put a lot of my priority, and I would like to continue to do so.
Okay. So that was the development along the waterfront.
Yeah.
And got a priority three. Well, of course the tax base and either keeping it from the taxes
right.
from not going up or going down possibly.
That's a factor there as well. Anything we put into Belfast Yards will help with the tax base as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's city owned now, pays no taxes. I think people don't realize when you look around Belfast how much property tax we lose because either the city or the county own land.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about we're going to have now three courthouses.
Right.
In downtown Belfast, none of which pay property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
You lost two tax-paying properties for the new county courthouse. That land came off the tax rolls. So, you know, that money has to be replaced. We have to find that revenue somewhere.
Right. And one of the things we wanted to know about is what are your thoughts on what can be done to keep young people here in town rather than heading off south or wherever they might go as they grow up?
Early this year, Mike Hurley and I sponsored an event at the library on exactly this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in part inspired by the fact that we had elected a young mayor. We invited a diverse group of people. We went all over. We went and invited the kids that were at the skate park. We invited young business owners, people who worked at the hospital, people who worked at McDonald's, people from Athena Health. The co-op, everywhere, all across town, anywhere we could meet with young people. And we had an event, and we said the rules are going to be that we'll introduce it and maybe do a little summation at the end. But in the meeting, nobody over 30 is allowed to talk. And we did make an exception. We let Aaron Herbig talk. And so we had 70 or 80 people, young people in that room, and we posed exactly this question. And some of them had just come. Some were getting ready to go. But the summation over and over and over again was that what they needed to move here or to stay here if they were here was better jobs, cheaper housing, and more fun things to do. And like I said the other night at the forum, if they'll find the fun, we'll try to do what we can about the other two. I do think we've made good progress on jobs. I think there may be some announcements not that far in the future about more job opportunities. Of course, that will then that puts the pressure on housing even more. So I think making it affordable for young people here. You look at Waterfall Arts, you know, that you look at so much that goes on here. You look at some of the young businesses that have started in the last few years. I think that the young people are in fact finding their own ways to have fun. And it might not necessarily be what you and I did when we were young, but if they can't afford to live here, then nothing else matters.
Understood. Looking ahead, can you give us some idea of where you think things might be in 5 or 10 years? What do you expect in a general way? We're going to go back a little later with a list of specific issues, but just sort of in a general way, where do you think things are going, or would you like to see them going?
I think that things are going well. I think that I think we will have economic development that will help us lower the mill rate, which will bring in some housing, which will help with that. But I also think just generally, you know, this is the one part when people talk about the climate change situation. We have some serious challenges there. We've got problems right now. If you don't think we're already suffering from climate change, you go down to City Park and go down by the beach and look how much erosion is eating away the wall there. Where you see there's they've got a hurricane fence up there. That's to keep. That's not because they think you're going to fall off. It's because they're afraid it might cave in under you. We have the same thing at the footbridge. So there's serious challenges there. But at the same time, I think, and I hate, I have to put this just right because I don't want this to come off wrong. But the state of Maine in general and Belfast and the other places along the coast are going to find growth because people aren't going to be going to Florida anymore. They're not going to be going to Arizona. And you may even see get a reverse of that. There, in some ways, some areas will achieve some benefit as well as all the problems caused by climate change. And one in this area will be a longer growing season. So agriculture in Maine is likely to actually get some benefit. And we're at the center of so much that goes on agriculturally. Again, I'm not saying this like, oh, this is a great thing, but there are two sides to the coin.
Well, sure, it'll be the climate will be a little bit warmer. Of course, the length of day and night, and that won't change.
Right, but those days will be warmer. I mean, I know some young farmers that are making a lot of money growing peach tree seedlings.
Mm-hmm.
Who had a peach tree in Maine 20 years ago?
Right.
but generally, I think that this community is going to. I don't think we're going to boom into 20,000 anytime soon, although the state of Maine is projecting that the state population will double in the next, I think he said, 30 years.
Right.
But I think we're on a path to slow, steady growth.
Sure, and probably a lot of that people coming up from the south as the climate gets hotter will be along the coast.
Yeah.
Where it's most pleasant and
exactly.
So forth. Yeah, I've heard people say that they think eventually there'll be a sort of a modest-sized city running all the way from Rockland to here, you know, and maybe up to Bucksport, you know, over the course of the next decades.
I think you can already see areas filling in.
Yeah.
You look at, say, Winterport, which large areas of Winterport now just look like Bangor suburbs.
Uh-huh. And we've got the same sort of possibility all up and down this west side of Penobscot Bay.
Yeah.
So we have again in general terms we've had some issues come up lately that are causing a little bit of divisiveness and people on one side and the other. The question here on my sheet is how would you work with people who have different opinions from yourself?
Well, I always have. And I've done a lot of work with people. Well, I would give an example of our former mayor, mm-hmm. the Honorable Walter Ash, who we didn't always agree, but we always managed to work together on things. I'm pleased to say in my reelection campaign that I've gotten support from a number of people who are I'm known to be a pretty partisan Democrat, and I've gotten some very strong support from people like Dana Keene, Nancy Hamilton, and other prominent Republicans, because they know that when it comes to the problems of the city and opportunities for the city, that we're all going to work together the best we can. And I'm honored by that. It's kind of funny when someone I battled with over many, many things over many years, all of a sudden you're sitting side by side working together. But that's how it's supposed to be. When the important things come up, we work together. I remember, you remember when we had that ice storm at Christmas time a few years ago, and mm-hmm. it was that breakfast we put on. There was the call went for volunteers for breakfast at come to the high school at 4 a.m. for the line workers, the utility guys. They had come from all over the place.
Yeah.
And I remember walking in, and I remember seeing Jane Crosby Giles and Aaron Herbig. They're running against each other now, but there they were side by side, you know, helping the community. And that's the bottom line, as you just say. There's places to disagree, and there's places where we all have the common interest of the best things for the community.
Okay. Let's move down some of this list of issues, you know, your stance or proposed solutions. You've already mentioned property taxes. Do you have a little anything more on that particular topic of how we can at least hold them level or find ways to move them down?
Yeah, it's not. I've heard a number of ideas come up from candidates during this candidacy, and I'm glad people are putting up ideas, throwing ideas out, and that's why I'm glad we're having more forums and more public discussion now, so ideas get kicked around. But there's no gimmick and there's no trick. There's two things you can do. You can cut the budget or you can raise more revenue. That's it. Now, maybe a new legislature helps out with revenue sharing. Maybe the state finally starts funding the schools, although that doesn't have to do with the city budget. The city has no control over that. And I'll just point out as an aside, the city gets blamed for a lot of tax burden that's not our fault because we send out the bill.
Right.
But it's not all our bill. We just send it out. But that's all you can do. Now, my opponent made some suggestions like including income or past earnings in with the value of the property having a different rate for people who are only here part of the year. Those are not viable solutions. They're not even allowable under state law. You either get more taxpayers to mm-hmm. share the burden,
yeah,
or you cut city services. That's all you can do. And I've sat through four budgets now. There's no if we were to make any kind of substantial cuts, we run pretty lean. Mm-hmm. We run pretty lean. If we were to cut 10%, you'd be closing the library 3 days a week. You'd be having the city clerk's office only open 2 days a week. You'd be closing City Park Pool. You'd be laying off cops. There's no way you're going to substantially cut this budget. There's only one solution, and that is to spread the burden among more taxpayers, which means bring in economic development.
Very good. And that's one of the next questions down the list. Other things that might be done to encourage economic development, small, large, various scales.
Well, the tax rate is number one, obviously. There's mm-hmm. no question about it. I think we've done a pretty good job, you know. I remember not that many years ago walking down Main Street and half of the stores being closed. And I think that hiring an economic development director to work full-time on these matters made a big difference. People don't always see all the benefit from what Thomas Kittredge does because there's offices. So some of the offices that are upstairs above the stores that were never rented are rented now. But there are other things that I think we ought to be looking at. And one thing that I've talked to a number of people about recently is that we have a lot of focus on downtown. Our town, Belfast, does a great job with downtown, but parts of the city outside of downtown don't get as much attention, and more can be done to try to bring economic development to them. I've been talking to people about whether or not we need an our town equivalent for the east side, mm-hmm. some sort of like a Searsport Avenue Association that would help those businesses. There's empty spaces there. There's places people could be going in. There's land that's been zoned for development that was never built on.
Right.
And I think that if we were to maybe get some of the attention that the economic office, that our town Belfast, that the chamber has been able to pay downtown, if some of that could be focused on the east side, I think there's great opportunity for new business to come in there.
Yeah, that was another thing on our list was the east side. I understand that there's also less infrastructure over there.
Yes.
Need for sidewalks and
yes.
other things of that kind.
Council held a workshop on capital projects next year, and there was a consensus on the council that the 141 sidewalk was the number one infrastructure priority. And it's difficult because you've got areas where the houses are right, you know, the property lines are right up to the road on one side of the road, and then a little ways down on the other. There's the little bridge which is a real problematic. What you're going to do there without spending $1 million to build a new bridge, and we got to deal with DOT, and that's another thing that, you know, when you're going out Route 1 towards Searsport, there's a lot. It's fast. The traffic moves fast, and there's all these big curves in the road. Well, DOT has rules about where you can put curb cuts. Mm-hmm. And there's a formula based on visibility, and that includes that factors in the speed limit and how far you can see around the next curve. And there are large areas over there that are hard to develop because you can't put in a curb cut. You'd have to, you know, piggyback off of a neighbor's and things like that. So maybe there's some way we can find workarounds on some of those things. If you had an organization over there that was specifically devoted to developing, economically developed these sites, they might be able to look and say to, just throwing a name out, tire warehouse, what if somebody could come up through behind you here and put some stores, and you know, make a drive that goes over to the next property and build something up in there. And you know, maybe if we could coordinate some of that, we might be able to get more done over there.
Okay. You've also mentioned a little bit of erosion and stuff along the waterfront. Are there other environmental issues that you're thinking of? You know, maybe inland or elsewhere.
Yeah, and I think we've got some great areas here. We've got some nice trail systems and things like that, and we've made some real progress with the bag ban and things like that. I think we can go, you know, people are bringing ideas to us about, you know, now people are talking about banning the little nip bottles. I don't know if we're going to go through any of that, but I'm interested in hearing those ideas. But as far, for Belfast, I think the shoreline is so important as that it kind of drowns out either environmental issues. We have had some problems with some businesses with discharges and that sort of thing, and we need to keep an eye on that. But generally, this is a community that's pretty focused. I do think there's also some opportunities we are going to have when the new public works yard goes online. 95% of the city's energy needs, meaning the city government, not every house, mm-hmm. the city government needs, the police station, city hall, the library, the fire station, street lights, the harbor, will be met by our own electricity that we're generating off of our solar panels between the fire station, Pitcher Road, and the public works yard. And yes, I think we can actually expand beyond that.
Yeah, fill me in a little bit on that. The public works yard that's now up on Congress Street is moving.
Yes, they're moving to Crocker Road.
Right out.
Construction is going on right now. It's almost exactly halfway between Marsh Road and Route 3, which gives them, which is nice because they can come out in two directions, and they're not right in the middle of a residential neighborhood. And it's we got a really good buy on the property, and we are just the energy will pay back pretty quickly what we paid for the property. And if you go over to the old public works yard, these guys, they sacrifice for this city, for what they make compared to what they do. You know, working on the roads and the sidewalks all summer and then plowing in the winter and trying to keep things up. And they were just working and spending their time over there in really bad conditions. The place was a mess, you know, and so they'll have a brand new facility. It'll actually save the fact that we'll be able to put more vehicles indoors. The fact that we will have a indoor wash bay will help keep the equipment better longer, and in the long run, save the taxpayers money. These guys in the wintertime, when they come back and the truck is covered with mud and slush and salt, they were hosing it off outside. In the middle of the snowstorm, well, they're going to have a bay to clean it. You just think, just that right there tells you what are you going to save on, you know, the life of your vehicles. But also, there is going to be a substantial solar array there.
Well, that's cool. What's going to become of the, or do we know yet what's going to become of the property there on Congress?
Well, first of all, once they move out, we're going to have to make sure there may be some cleanup to have to do with brown fields and contaminated soil and that. Although we don't think it's too bad, but it is the perfect place for housing. It is ideal for putting in ideally what we would like to see is some kind of multiple unit housing that. Apartments, complexes, or townhouses. You could put a lot in there. You could put a lot of apartments in there.
How big a piece of property is that, do you know? I mean, roughly?
I think 4.5 acres that could be developed.
I see.
Which would be two-story apartment buildings. That's a lot of apartments.
I see.
And the thing is, one thing I see is, you know, if I had been on the council at the time, I think I probably would oppose the location of the Alberta Way facility up on 141, the seniors housing there, because of the location. I'd be glad to have the facility, but that's a bad spot. They're isolated. We have to stop that. We have to stop putting, you know, places like that where the residents can't get anywhere. Right. And the public works yard. If we had even if you look at we have housing up at the end of Ryan Road, by the time they walk down to Route 1 and then get to a store, they're walking miles just to get to a store. There's families in there, single mothers with kids. We're marginalizing people like that, the poor people, the elderly, the people with disabilities, by sticking them out on the fringes. Now, here's a piece of land where we could build housing that's in walking distance of Hannaford, of downtown, of City Park. It's ideal for that, and that's something I'm going to really, really push hard for in the new council. It'll come up sooner than you think because the public works yard will be done before you know it.
This is a public affairs presentation of WBFY in Belfast, Maine, 100.9 on your dial. Vic Treadwell is interviewing two-term incumbent candidate for City Council, Neil Harkness.
Right. Well, we've got one more item here on the detail list before we get to the elephant in the room, and that's about schools. And I know that they're a separate organization, but do you have... Do you have thoughts about the school system?
Yeah, I think they do a good job with what they've got, and they don't got enough. And I primarily put that on the state. That, you know, they, as we all know, and we keep voting for the state to give more money, and it doesn't happen. And it's worse than that because then when we prosper, the state just charges us more, and we get even less. But I also think it's time to look at the school district and the way the property tax is allocated. I think we get the short end of the stick. I think we pay a disproportionate amount of the cost of the RSU as a whole.
We meaning Belfast
as opposed to the other communities. When the RSU was created, the decision was made that the tax burden on each town would be based on valuation alone. Well, we've got most of the valuation. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, you look at all the properties in Belfast and add them all up to what they're worth, what Front Street Shipyard, is there an equivalent of Front Street Shipyard in Belmont? Is there an equivalent of Hannaford in Morrill? Not to mention we've got so many more people in private properties. So our valuation, which is around $750 million. So if you won that lottery, you could technically buy every building in Belfast. It dwarfs the other towns. But we have more seniors. We have more single-family residents. Mm-hmm. And so proportionately, we're paying way more per Belfast student than the other towns are. And this is going to come up for renegotiation. I don't remember exactly, but I believe it's next year, because the agreement had a sunset in it, and I think there needs to be some consideration in there of there needs to be a the formula needs to be a mix of valuation and population. I understand that being the big dog gives you some responsibility in the pack. I get that, but not the whole burden. And I say I think we carry too much of the burden. I think if there was some attempt to bring population in as well. And I tell you one that drives me crazy is transportation costs.
Yeah.
It probably costs more to transport the Searsmont kids than it does the Belfast kids, but we pay per kid.
I see.
If your kid, if you live three blocks from high school and your kid walks, Belfast still pays taxes to cover that kid's transportation needs and pays the same amount that they pay for the kid who lives at the far end of Searsmont and rides the bus a half an hour each way.
Got it. All right. Well, then we've got one more thing to talk about.
Uh-huh.
Guess what that is?
How about the marijuana ordinance? Nobody's talking about that.
All right. Well, let's go with that.
Well, we can squeeze a couple things
sure,
in.
Sure, yeah, we got 15, 20 minutes here.
Okay, yeah, because that's a big issue that, and I mentioned at the forum that I was surprised it didn't get asked. We're working right now on the medical marijuana issue, and we'll probably finish that before the end of the year. But then next year, when the state finishes its regulations, the state level regulations
on recreational
sales, then. Say the same thing. They dump all the details on the municipalities, and we've got to first of all decide, will we allow it, period? Secondly, if we will, where, what kind of regulations will we put on it? How many stores? Is a certain number of stores? I have no idea. Can Belfast Variety sell it, or has it got to be a dedicated store? We'll if we do agree that to allow recreational sales, we may be the only community in the whole county that does. That could be an economic boom for us. My personal position on it is it was put on the ballot. Belfast voted to approve it, so we should move forward on it with some sensible regulations.
Right. But right now there's also obstructions at the state level.
They have to write the state law before we can write the city ordinance.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, now on to the salmon factory, the salmon farm. And there's several different things to figure out about that. What's your general position on it?
My general position is, just as mentioned earlier, about we need economic development. Now, these people come along. We didn't hunt for them. We didn't seek them out. We didn't put an article in Salmon Business Today or something saying, come to Belfast. They came looking and presented this opportunity, which would dramatically change the economics of the city government as far as revenue coming in and the tax base. To me, it would be irresponsible to not pursue the opportunity and deal with the hurdles when we come to them. If we get to the point where we say this is untenable because of pollution, because of water usage or whatever, we have to ask those questions before we can get answers to them. And there's a process by which you do that. Now, the area was not zoned for aquaculture, but it sits. This is one thing that was convincing to me. That to vote to approve changing that zoning, where Matthews Brothers sits, was approved for aquaculture. Now, if you're talking about whether or not a change in the zoning would be in harmony with the zoning and with the comprehensive plan, it seems to me if you have a parcel that's the second parcel over from the water, and it's deemed to be okay for aquaculture, the parcel between it and the water would sensibly be allowable for aquaculture. So I approved it because I'm not trying to talk around the issue. I hope very much that they pass their inspections, that they present a tenable plan, that it is viable with the amount of water, that it does not pollute the harbor, that they come here, and that they pay a whole lot of taxes, and then they provide a good job. I really hope that happens. But it's got to go through this process to make sure that if it does come, that it comes right.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about some of the details of it. One issue is the whole the problems below the high tide line. You got an input and a discharge
right.
of salt water, and pipelines and a possible trench to put those pipelines in. One issue that I've heard about is that over the past 150 years or whatever, a lot of pollutants have come down the Penobscot River and wound up in the mud, and that there might be some issues there about digging trenches and so forth to put in pipes. Do you have any thoughts on that, making sure that it's not a pollution issue?
Yeah, that's a really good point, but it's not in our purview. That's DEP's territory.
Gotcha.
And I know a lot of people go, well, you know, the people that have been running the state government, I don't trust them. But the people who do the testing and work on that level are professionals who I think do a pretty good job. And if that's the case, then they may end up telling them that they can't trench. And then they're either going to come up with a workaround or they're going to abandon the project.
Mm-hmm.
But those are exactly the kind of things I'm saying we have to find out through the process.
Right.
So I can't judge that without knowing. But mm-hmm. I do want to make a point that a lot of people are concerned about what they're going to be putting out, what's going to come out of the end of the pipe.
Yeah.
I want to point out that they're going to have an intake pipe in the same area where they have an outtake pipe. So whatever they put out, they're going to pull back in. So it's clearly in their interest to put out as clean an effluent as possible, since they're going to be pulling it right back in.
Well, I understand there's going to be somewhat of a separation between the input and the output.
Well, but opponents are saying the entire bay will be polluted. So
yeah, though I did hear one interesting idea, which is that the from the Friends of Penobscot Bay, that the modeling of the subsurface currents and so forth is basically based on very general principles, and that there's apparently some sort of a buoy that could be put in for a year or so. To similar to one that's down at Rockland that
uh-huh.
some of the models are based on, that could be put in, but it would be a delay because it would take a year to gather a year's worth of
uh-huh.
data on the currents and so forth. Would that be something? You know, I mean, obviously, the city would like revenues and jobs as soon as possible, but it may be. Do you think it might be necessary to slow the process down to do things like that, scientific research?
That's possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly possible. That's at the state level. You know, we don't have any jurisdiction over what goes on out in the bay.
Right.
But I'm, you know, I think that, and I would say that to those who are, you know, have concerns about this project, that if it goes through. Let's focus on those sort of things. Let's focus on making sure things are safe and done correctly. I really salute what the planning board did with some of the things they wrote into the ordinance, like if you're within 1,000 feet of Nordic's property line and you have a well, that Nordic is going to have to pay to monitor your well
mm-hmm.
and is going to have to reimburse you and make you whole if your well goes dry.
Right. Well,
that's kind of putting their money where their mouth is. And also another thing that that was added in and the council approved was that if they drill these deep wells into the aquifer, that the water can only be used for the specified usage that they declared, which was raising the fish. They can't do anything else with that water. They can't turn around and bottle it. It can't. You're not going to see Poland Springs trucks coming out of there. If they wanted to do that, they would have to permit all over again from the very beginning, and the whole process would start over from scratch.
Right. Well, that was going to be the next thing I was going to ask about was water use. There's also the issue of volume of water.
Right.
And that's under the purview of the water district, right?
Correct.
But you're satisfied because it's the water district that kind of came up with this, did a lot of the early negotiations
yes.
and so forth with
yes.
this.
Yes, and I've got to tell you, the people on the water district board, this is maybe like the least known, you know, agency out there. People don't really give much thought except when they pay their bills. And it's not, it's quasi-governmental, okay? But they get no tax money. They get nothing from the city. They're not included in the city budget. They have their own budget, which is based entirely on the rates they get, the water, people paying their water bills. And they were, those folks were so diligent on this, of making sure, you know, and they said from the beginning, Nordic come in, offered to buy their land, offered to buy water from them, and they said, this all sounds great, but we're going to start with one premise, which is we will not raise rates one nickel. And if anything in this plan, it was to cause us to even temporarily raise rates, we won't do it. They really did a great job. Keith Pooler, head of the water district, wrote a letter about some of these issues. That's, you know, a public letter sent to the papers, and it's posted on the city website, where he discusses from the water. Now, there's three sources of water, so we're talking about the water district.
Mm-hmm.
He discusses the amount of usage of the water, what they have. These are people been working with this water district and working with these aquifers for many, many, many years, and they have total confidence that they can supply plenty of water. And they also, I will say that Keith in his letter pointed out that there is much talk in circulation of this claim that if there was a drought and the water would start to run out, that industry gets first priority. This is according to Mr. Pooler, who is an expert on this. This is categorically false. And he actually listed the priority list they have, that if there's only enough water to send on one pipe, you send it to the hospital. If there's enough for two pipes, you start going to nursing homes and down the list. And the industry is at the bottom of the list. But that's the water district.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the aquifer and there's the ocean. The ocean, they're not going to run out. I think most of the concern when people talk about that is they're not so worried about the water district, what the water district can supply. Although the water district is sitting on hundreds of billions of gallons of water. They've got wells they tapped, said, there's wells they tapped years ago, said, oh, my God, there's an incredible amount of water down here, and it put caps on them and haven't been back.
Mm-hmm.
I think the concern more is the aquifer. I think people have to recognize that if you've got a well in your yard, you live in that area, that's probably groundwater well. Groundwater and the aquifer are two different things. People need to also recognize that any water they take out of the aquifer, they're going to be taking at the last stage before it goes into the ocean. So they're taking what already comes down. That the water they take is going to be in the ocean in a week or two anyway as it seeps out. And then again, I don't know the percentages of how much will be from each source. I do want to say with the water district is we have some places in the city have water pipes that are more than 100 years old. And the money they will get by selling water to Nordic will allow them to replace miles and miles and miles of bad pipe. We had five water main breaks on High Street last year.
Okay. And the one other sort of detail issue is traffic and you know, trucks or whatever.
Yeah. We checked with DOT.
Mm-hmm.
30,000 vehicles a day on average pass that spot on Route 1. They're going to get fewer deliveries, even at peak, than Matthews Brothers does around the corner.
Uh-huh.
They're talking about, you know, there's some confusion about how many employees they're looking to hire. Now, the number 60 keeps getting kicked around, but 60 is an initial hire.
Mm-hmm.
As they build out, they're going to build a tank, and they're going to put smolt in it, little baby quarter-inch long salmon. How many employees do you need for that? But those salmon are going to get big. And when the salmon get big, they're going to need people to process, people to clean, people to cart off the waste, all these things, shipping and all that. And it'll probably be quite a few more employees, maybe up to, I've heard top end, maybe 300. But that's, first of all, we don't know if that's on two shifts. It's 150 a shift. 150 cars coming in and out of a parking lot there on a road that gets 30,000 vehicles a day, I don't think is going to be a significant problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's also the trucks bringing in feed and taking out processed.
Right, but they're still saying that that's like 15 trucks a day or something.
I see. So it's not like we're going to wind up with a traffic light in a major intersection down there, or
I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to traffic light. You know, DOT tells you they won't put traffic lights on Route 1, mm-hmm. but there's like 12 of them in Rockland.
Right.
They just put a new one in Wiscasset. You know, but they tell us, because we've been asking for years for, we have two very dangerous intersections, 141 mm-hmm. coming off of Route 1,
yeah.
and where Outer Congress crosses.
Yeah.
We've begged for them to do something there before we have a tragedy. You know, I'm not necessarily against putting any traffic lights there. And I would say if you're concerned about traffic coming in and out of there, I invite you to sit on the corner of Outer Congress and Route 1 when Duck Trap River changes shifts.
Yep.
Because they've got, 140 or 150 employees or something in there. And they all come out of work. And I think 3/4 of them want to turn left onto Route 1.
Yeah.
So we already have these kind of situations. And we get by with it. And it works out.
Yeah. Well, I personally understand that intersection myself. I make part of my living hauling stuff to the recycling center. And I got to cross there all the time. And that's can be a long wait sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And long waits are dangerous because then people get impatient.
Yeah, they cut around corners and zip
around.
That's
one of the biggest problems on 141.
Yeah. You know,
people come down and they inch out, and people come off the bridge and cut too close.
Yep. Okay, well, one last little thing to wrap this up. There's a lot of strong feelings one way or another. And I wondered if you had any comments on the whole thing of civility and keeping temperatures cool.
Yeah, this is obviously a very big deal to a lot of people. You've got people who are really concerned because they live nearby. There are people who are concerned about environmental issues. There are people who are concerned because they just think how much it's going to radically change the town. And on the other hand, you have people who are saying, I want to keep my house and I can't afford these taxes. Or I don't want my kids to move away. I want my kids to be able to get good jobs here, and this could be an opportunity. And both sides feel very passionately what they feel. So things are going to get heated now and then. I think there's been some name calling. I think people need to also, I've heard people say, I don't think people are as wound up as they were over Walmart. I think there was less civility then. If you recall, and I mentioned this the other night, remember when Roger Lee just in passing said, well, if motorcycles are making a lot of noise downtown, is it even possible to ban them? And things went nuts. There were like 200 people show up city council mad as hell about an offhand remark. So, you know, things can blow up. I think we need to step back and we need to all calm down. You know, look, you may not like this. You may think it's bad. I understand. I respect that. It is not going to destroy Belfast. It is not going to be the end of our community. I don't think it's going to make any substantial negative change in our community. I think it's going to make positive change. If I could say give any message to the people who are so opposed to it, I respect the opposition. I respect their opinions. What I have a hard time understanding, and I take responsibility for my inability to understand this, and it hurts me, is people who tell me how scared they are. I don't think anything that the city council, the city government, or anyone else with any kind of authority or power in this town do should scare residents. That's, to me, is heartbreaking when I hear that. But when I try to say, I don't think it's going to be that bad, then I don't seem to be listened to. And like I said, I can take some of that on my own, not inability to articulate it, but I have to put some on their unwillingness to hear. Because when fear takes over, the rational mind shuts down. But we're not trying to do anything to hurt Belfast. Everybody who's running for council on either side of this debate is running because they love this community. And I just hope we can get through this in a way. afterwards, and I said to my opponent, when this is done, whatever happens, you and I should sit down, have coffee, and talk about how we can work together on many problems facing this city.
Excellent. Yeah, I was at the end of the city council forum back beginning of last week. The moderator came through with a comment on how civil it had all managed to be, despite some of the high temperatures that have been seen. And I thought that went very well.
I think everybody on that panel, every candidate, personally knew every other candidate before this started.
Mm-hmm.
There's no strangers. You know, you're talking to your neighbors, you're talking to your friends. And yeah, you could disagree, and sometimes it can get hot. But then the next day you go, whew, boy, that was, you know, then maybe just, you know. When Joanne and I, when this first came up, Joanne and I went and sat at the co-op for a couple of hours talking over the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
and where we stood on it and what we thought. And we had such a good time, they had to come and tell us, and they'd come throw us out because they were closing up and we were making them wait.
Yeah.
So we can all be friends in the end, I'm sure.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's City Councilor Neil Harkness. This is Belfast Community Radio. My name is Vic Treadwell. We want to thank everybody out there for their interest in community affairs here in Belfast. Thank you, Neil, for coming in.
Thank you, Vic.
And remind everybody to give it some thought and get out there and vote.
The proceeding was a public affairs presentation of WBFY, Belfast Community Radio.